Okay, let's continue. And welcome to those who have just arrived this afternoon. You'll have to kind of jump in midstream here, but it won't really matter. So we're all just treading water here with Dogen in this moment. Dogen's vision of being time is so different from our conventional concept of time that it really is hard to wrap our heads around it, wouldn't you say? Or else sometimes it seems totally obvious, right? At this rate, both. I think many of you may be familiar with the image of Indra's net. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It appears in the Hua Yan or Flower Garland Sutra, which is an early Chinese Mahayana sutra, but it goes back to Indra, the king of gods, in the ancient Vedic tradition. And Indra's net is an image that depicts the interpenetrating universe, where this boundless net at each intersection or each node of the net is a jewel that reflects all the other jewels. It's sort of a holographic vision, isn't it? So now imagine all these jewels in this net pulsing in and out of existence, flickering faster than we can ever imagine. With our limited senses, there is always a gap between the moment of a stimulus, right? A sound, a light, and our perception of it. In another fascicle of Dogen talks about time and our human existence in terms of living and dying. Here's what he says. Know that through causes and conditions, a human body in this lifetime is a temporary assemblage of the four great elements, right? Earth, water, fire, and air, and the five skandhas. The five skandhas you just chanted in the Heart Sutra at lunchtime, right? They're the elements of the body-mind. It always contains eight sufferings, and forgive me, I did not look up the eight sufferings, but you can count that they stand in for all the rest. Further, it is born and perishes. It is born and perishes moment by moment without ceasing. The human body, remember, he's talking about the human body, is born and perishes moment by moment without ceasing. It is born and perishes at each of the 65 moments contained within one finger snap. Yeah. Flo talked about the finger snap sutta on Sunday, right? Because of ignorance, we don't notice it, right? How can we notice that? There are 6,400,099,980 moments in a day and night, he says. And the five skandhas are born and perish at each moment, but we don't notice it. What a pity, although we are born and perish at each moment, we don't notice it. Huh. The Sanskrit word for moment in Buddhist thought is ksana. And this is what Dogen is referring to when he says there's 65 moments and a finger snap. A Buddhist dictionary will tell us that a ksana is 1/75 of a second. Can you notice that? So the neuroscientist Francisco Varela once studied the time it takes subjects to recognize an image. He discovered that there is a gap of up to 180 milliseconds before there's any brain activity at all. Right? So we see an image. 180 milliseconds brain activity, then up to 360 milliseconds before the neurons fire in an attempt to recognize that image. So there's a non-conceptual awareness of seeing something at that point, but it's not yet identified. If recognition occurs, then between 360 and 540 milliseconds, there's what's called synchrony scatter, when all these other neurons start firing up, right? From our experience, right, in our memory. So we're trying, to help us identify that thing. And then up to 720 milliseconds before there's a motor response. Now, I have no idea what 720 milliseconds, like how long that is. But if we consider that 10 milliseconds is 1/100th of a second, these moments of perception are very close to Dogen's finger snap. How did he know that? How did he know that? How did those ancients know that? Because they paid attention to their mind. They paid attention when they were sitting still. What seems instantaneous is actually not. We think that the present is already gone, but we can't even be here now. Right? Think about the light from a far distant star, say millions of light years away. How by the time it reaches us, that star may already be dead or very different in form, right? That is almost easier to imagine than the reality that there's already a gap between my words leaving my mouth and you hearing them, let alone understanding them. But in our Zazen practice, sometimes the mind quiets down enough that we can experience a little bit of what that's like. I remember years ago, some days into a week-long Zen Sesshin, intensive meditation retreat, Michael and I were practicing with Jan Chozen Bays in Oregon, and Michael was the timekeeper. This is before we were ever ordained or anything. And he had to light a stick of incense on the altar at the beginning of each block of Zazen. Oh, I meant to check with Michael. Where is he?
He's hiding.
I meant to check with you to make sure I tell this right. So it was dark. It was early in the morning. This is approximate.
Correct
so far. There was an old-fashioned kerosene lamp on the altar, on the edge of the altar. And I don't remember what. Okay, here I'm wrong.
It was just the glass cover.
The chimney. You know what that looks like. Okay. Point being, as Michael was up there doing what he was supposed to be trying to do, as the timekeeper, the glass chimney fell off and shattered. And I heard each shard hit the ground individually. And so that was the first thing. This sounds, this cascade of sounds. And then there was identification. Oh, the lamp chimney breaking. No. Before that, there was perception of the beauty of the sounds. Mm-hmm. It was music. It was like music. And then, oh, the chimney. That's the order it went. And then, oh, I hope Michael's okay. But it was like slow motion. And it was a wonderful teaching to me. I thought, this is what's going on all the time. But we can't, you know, it's too fast for us to notice. And then everything stayed really quiet. And okay, I guess he's all right.
Except he was mortified.
That's what I was going to say. It was mortifying to him, probably. But for me, it was this wonderful lesson in perception. Thanks, Michael. When the Dalai Lama heard about Francisco Varela's research, he was excited to see the correspondence between Buddhist teachings and the neuroscience. And there's another remarkable correspondence between Dogen's description of the way each moment is born and dies and contemporary particle physics. Believe me, this is a stretch for me. But the concepts of the physicist David Bohm, B-O-H-M, what he calls implicate order and explicate order, which describes a kind of framework for understanding phenomena coming into existence. So implicate order, he also calls enfolded reality, and explicate order, he also calls unfolded reality. Enfolded and unfolded. And he talks about this dual reality as the fundamental ground of existence. No, sorry, the enfolded, which is also a state of potential. The enfolded as the ground of existence, and the unfolded, or the explicate order, is the phenomenal world of phenomena, right? So he describes this enfolding and unfolding, implicate and explicate, as what we experience as the passing of time. But he describes it as a kind of superfine oscillation that's happening all the time. So that these two realities are virtually simultaneous. And this corresponds rather beautifully, I think, to what in Buddhist thought are called the two truths. The truth of the absolute, which is the reality of unity, of oneness, of interconnectedness. That would be the enfolded, the implicate order, and the reality of differentiation, particularity, and that would correspond to the explicate order. Bohm claimed that with matter, as with consciousness, each moment has a certain explicate order, the expression, the coming into being. And this resonates with that holographic principle by which every point in a hologram in Indra's net contains the whole three-dimensional image of every other point. And which Dogen is saying in this text, also that point, we called it a Dharma position, remember this morning, contains all of space and time. So there's Indra's net again. And all these concepts, I think, resonate rather stunningly with this text from over 600 years ago, which we'll see in the next section. Now that sounds all very out there. So we will bring it back down, you know, to our actual life and practice, because that is Dogen's point ultimately here. So we don't want to get carried away. So let's start where we left off and read section 6. It's a bit of a long paragraph. Is there someone who would be willing to read that for us? Yeah, Flo, thank you.
Yet an ordinary person who does not understand Buddha Dharma may hear the words being timed this way. For a while I was 3 heads and 8 arms. For a while I was an 8 or 16 foot body. This is like having crossed over rivers and climbed mountains. Even though the mountains and rivers still exist, I have already passed them and now reside in the jeweled palace and vermilion tower. Those mountains and rivers are as distant from me as heaven is from earth. It is not that simple. At the time the mountains were climbed and the rivers were crossed, you were present. Time is not separate from you, and as you are present, time does not go away. As time is not marked by coming and going, the moment you climb the mountains is being time right now. If time keeps coming and going, you are being time right now. This is the meaning of being time. Does being time not swallow up the moment when you climbed the mountains and the moment when you resided in the jeweled palace and vermilion tower? Does it not spit them out?
So, for people who weren't here this morning, just a reminder, for those who were, a reminder that we're using, or I'm having us use the translation being time as a compound noun rather than the expression the time being, because I feel it's closer to what Dogen's saying here, and that the time being is more reflective of our ordinary way of thinking that time is a period of time with a beginning and an end. You know, we usually say for the time being, meaning provisionally, for this period of time. And that's not his meaning. Here he's saying we usually like to think that there was a period of time when we were a deluded, confused asura. Remember the being with the 3 heads and the 8 arms, caught up in competition and always wanting to be better than everyone else. And so we might think that there was a period of time when we were like that, but we're not like that anymore. You know, we had an enlightenment experience, and now we're a golden Buddha. And to get there, we crossed rivers and traversed mountains of hard, you know, lots of sesshin practice. And eventually, we got to the jeweled palace of enlightenment and bliss. When we do have one of those experiences of opening, of dropping away of self, that's called kensho, and we think, there, I've got it. All my struggle and suffering are past. And it's such a crushing disappointment when all those nasty habit patterns, when your face turns red with frustration and rage again. You come home from sesshin and your partner does something annoying and you just snap their head off. There's the asura, right back, darn. But Dogen says, no, time doesn't come and go as past and present and future in that way. It's always our life, moment to moment. And past and future are present in each moment of our life. You know, if we're dreaming about some future better job, we'll say, it's right now that we're imagining that. And if we're remembering, you know, a place that we used to love or a person that we used to love and that's gone, we're having that memory now. It's a present experience. So being time swallows up each moment of our life and spits it out again. The moment when we're a raging asura, the moment when we're a monk climbing the mountain, and the moment that we sit in the jeweled palace of luminous mind. Each of this moment, each of these moments is life in dynamic flux, sort of enfolding and unfolding, you know, swallowing up, being spat out each moment. I love that that image of being swallowed up and spat out again resonates with the enfolding and unfolding. Okay, so could someone read passage number 7? Jacob?
3 heads and 8 arms may be yesterday's time. An 8 or 16 foot body may be today's time. Yet yesterday and today are both in the moment when you directly enter the mountains and see myriad peaks. Yesterday's time and today's time do not go away. 3 heads and 8 arms move forward as your time being. It looks as if they are far away, but they are here and now. The 8 or 16 foot body moves forward as your being time. It looks as if it is nearby, but it is exactly here. Thus, pine tree is time, bamboo is time.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so persuasive, isn't it, to think of our deluded self as something we want to banish to the past, into the past, right, and be done with, and of enlightenment out there in the future as a state we want to achieve once and for all. Whew, no more suffering and pain. But that red-faced Asura and the Golden Buddha are both part of the totality of our life, as of our human life, right? And I think what Dogen is offering us here is a vision that is both personal and all-inclusive, and thus deeply compassionate. As if we banish our Asura demon selves to some other than now place, we're banishing that in, we're saying, not me now, but you, you know, or them, or, you know, not them, me. We're dividing, we're separating, casting up all those walls that divide us from others and divide us from ourselves. So it's, although this may seem abstract, it's actually a deeply compassionate vision that Dogen is offering us, and it's also liberating. Because living in this all-inclusive present moment, we are not bound by our past mistakes or by our future fears and ambitions. They're included. And in the moment, our sole responsibility is to respond to this moment, this particular moment. I was really moved by, I told people this morning that Tom Wright and Shohaku Okumura, who translated this one version of Uji, and their teacher, Uchiyama Roshi's commentary, that they taught Michael and I in Kyoto many years ago. And I was moved by Tom's words in this essay at the end of the book. He grew up several years ahead of me in the States through the civil rights era, followed by the Vietnam War era. And he ended up in Japan a few years before I ended up in Canada for the same reasons, deeply influenced by the human cruelty and injustice perpetrated by our nation. He says, I believe those asuras and those mountains and rivers are closely linked to Dogen's personalization of time. This, that is, there is no way Dogen could divorce who he himself was from all the havoc and chaos of his times in Kamakura period Japan. It was a very chaotic, war-torn time, a lot of suffering. This personalization of time is expressed later in the text as go-uji, or the personal experience. The personal experiencing of living time is how they translate it. Your time being. Inhuman actions committed at any time in any age must be reflected on by all people in a personal way and seen as a part of one's larger self-identity. So he's bringing this right down to our place, our times, and our response to the world and our connection to the world. So this is not abstract. When Dogen says directly entering the mountains means fully, directly entering the mountains, by that he means fully entering into your life as it is right now. That's what he means when he says directly entering the mountains. So that means our life, our all-inclusive life, it means our blunders and our rages and our moments of peace and clarity. It also means with an awareness that we do this practice along with and supported by others. In another fascicle, Doga called Only a Buddha and a Buddha, which is a phrase I love. Only a Buddha and a Buddha can realize the Buddha way. He says, mountains, rivers, and earth are born at the same moment with each person. All Buddhas of past, present, and future are practicing together with each person. You know? We're kind of a, you know, DIY society, we think, right? But no. You know, we couldn't do anything without standing on the shoulders of our ancestors, and they are always with us, you know, when you stop and think about it. And we are doing it for those who come after, whether we are biological parents or not. And we need to remember that, too. At the end of this section, Dogen adds that all beings are being time. He says, a pine tree is time, bamboo is time. You know what bristlecone pine trees are? They're one of the oldest beings. There's a few that have been aged as 5,000 years old. And they're all gnarly and silver bark, and they grow in the high Sierras in Southern California. If you ever get a chance to go see them. And then bamboo, on the other hand, is a grass, and it lives in cycles of sprouting, growing, flowering, and dying, just like those Hindu cycles of time, right, that we talked about. And the cycle for a bamboo species depends on the species. Anywhere, those cycles can be anywhere from 3 to 120 years. So, what is the being time of an ant? Or a great blue whale? Right? What would it feel like to enter into the being time of a creature much tinier and much larger than ourselves? Each has its own characteristics, and each of their being times is completely interpenetrating with all other beings. Oops. Here's another passage from another fascicle of Dogen. The realization of the Buddhist patriarchs and matriarchs, we'll say, is perfectly realized real form. Real form is all dharmas. All dharmas are forms as they are. Nature's as they are, body as it is, the mind as it is, the world as it is, clouds and rain as they are, walking, standing, sitting, and lying down as they are, sorrow, joy, movement, and stillness as they are, a staff and a whisk as they are, succession of the Dharma and affirmation as they are, learning in practice and pursuing the truth as they are, the constancy of pines and the integrity of bamboos as they are. The constancy of pines and the integrity of bamboos. The constancy of you, the integrity of you. Okay, let's go to number 8. Someone willing to read? Yeah, Rob?
Do not think that time merely flies away. Do not see flying away as the only function of time. If time merely flies away, you would be separated from time. The reason you do not clearly understand being time is that you think of time only as passing. In essence, all things in the entire world are linked with one another as moments. Because all moments are being time, they are your being time.
Well, we do say time flies when you're having fun, right? Or maybe there are other times when we feel time is moving too fast. Apparently, people felt that way in Dogen's time, too. Or he wouldn't say this. But Dogen cautions us that we cannot understand being time if we only think of it as time passing. To understand being time, not just intellectually, but to live it, Dogen tells us repeatedly, we need to see the totality of our existence within this matrix of phenomena and circumstances, and to see the particularity of this life, this moment. And when we align with this reality, time has a kind of dynamic quality of movement or flowing. When Dogen says, because all moments are being time, they are your being time, he's using that word that we just mentioned, go-uji. It could be your being time, my being time, one's being time, but it has that personalized quality. It's the particularity of being time in the midst of the universality. Okay, let's continue. Section 9. Dennis.
Being time has a characteristic flowing. So-called today flows into tomorrow. Today flows into yesterday. Yesterday flows into today. And today flows into today. Tomorrow flows into tomorrow. Because flowing is a characteristic of time, moments of past and present do not overlap or line up side by side. Zen Master Kunyan is time. Wangbo is time. Matsu is time. Shitu is time. Because self and other are already time. Practice enlightenment is time. Being splattered with mud and getting wet with water to awaken others is also time.
Yeah. That's sort of classic Dogen language. He kind of gets you spinning. But what is he saying about this flowing quality of time? It's a challenging concept because he insists it's not sequential, mm-hmm. and yet it is moving. Mm. So,
interpenetrating.
Yeah, he says being time has this characteristic of flowing, and the Japanese word is kudoku. Oh, sorry. That's kudoku is the characteristic. It's sometimes called the virtuous characteristic. or virtuous power, sorry, virtuous power of flowing. That's kudoku. And it gives a sense of power or capacity. And so the power, and then flowing is kyoryaku. And that is also translated as moving, passing, or changing. These words that show up in Buddhist texts, in Japanese Buddhist texts, came from China at different times, so the pronunciation can vary depending on what century it came from China. But I thought it was interesting that the contemporary modern pronunciation of this word, which is keireki, refers to one's personal history, your resume, or being on pilgrimage.
Being
on pilgrimage. And so I just kind of liked the connection through the ages. You know, it's a Buddhist term that means something like flowing, movement, but in contemporary life, it's our resume, and also pilgrimage. Yeah. So in that,
same kanji.
Yeah, same kanji. Different reading. So Dogen, in this passage we just read, lists some of the great Tang Dynasty Zen masters. And their names will be familiar to some of you who were around for our practice period this past fall, where we looked at the great Chinese ancestors. And he's just saying that they, too, are being time, and that they're not just distant figures. Like I just said, you know, they're here, living presences in our life and practice. He's saying self and other are not separate in space or in time. I'm sure that many of us here have experienced the death of someone close to us, someone you love dearly, and you felt that sharp pain of absence that we call grief, missing, yearning. And yet maybe you have once in a while felt fleetingly a vivid sense of presence. I'm seeing some nods. Yeah. That mysterious way that we can't explain that we are still connected across time and space. The very last line in this passage is an important one. It says, being splattered with mud and getting wet with water is also time. This is what a bodhisattva must be willing to do. Remember, the bodhisattva is a being who aspires and commits to awakening for and with all beings. So bodhisattva needs to know what suffering is and to experience also what freedom from suffering is, to have a heart wide enough to be in this world with other with suffering beings. And that's getting down and getting splattered with mud and getting wet. Bodhisattva activity takes place in being time. So this is where Dogen's not, you know, he's not talking about just some abstract, you know, out there theory. He's saying this is what we need to understand to live as bodhisattvas in the world. The great sage Vimalakirti in the Vimalakirti Sutra tells us that to follow the Buddha way, the bodhisattva must be able to live in all realms of human existence. And he lists all these different, you know, suffering realms in human life, that bodhisattva needs to be able to go to the downtown east side or to war-torn, you know, or the tar sands. The bodhisattva needs to go with heart and eyes wide open without becoming ensnared in self-clinging. Vimalakirti says, the seeds of enlightenment are the body and the six senses. Greed, aversion, and ignorance, the five hindrances, those are the seeds of enlightenment. In other words, this very life, just as it is. And then he says, the lotus does not grow on the upland plain. The lotus grows in the mud and mire of the damp, low-lying place. In other words, our lives. Our lives are the ground of awakening. So we need to be rooted right here in this earth with wide open hearts and minds. Oh, how's our time? What time am I supposed to finish?
Define time.
Yes, well, we're in the relative world here. Let's do another paragraph. Val, you were going to... Yeah.
Although the views of an ordinary person and the causes and conditions of those views are what the ordinary person sees, they are not necessarily the ordinary person's reality. The reality merely manifests itself provisionally for the time being. No, not Yuji, as an ordinary person. Because you think your time or your being is not reality, you believe that the 16-foot golden body is not you. However, your attempts to escape from being the 16-foot golden body are nothing but bits and pieces of being time, the time being. Those who have not yet confirmed this should look into it deeply. The hours of horse and sheep, which are arrayed in the world now, are actualized by ascendings and descendings of being time at each moment. The rat's time, the tiger's time, sentient beings are time, Buddhas are time.
Okay, thank you. So here, again, he's reminding us that our typical views are conditioned and partial, not the full vast reality of our being. So that we see ourselves as the bits and pieces of our identity. We might identify with our gender, our race, our class, our sexuality, our nationality, our profession, our talents and abilities. We might identify with our delusions or with some experience of awakening. And we might disidentify with what we don't want or believe to be part of ourselves or to be beyond our reach. So we might disidentify with our red-faced ashra, or we might disidentify with the golden Buddha, right? And Dogen calls those bits and pieces of being time. So he urges us to investigate this deeply throughout the rhythms of our days and years. The horse, sheep, rat, and tiger are among the animals of the traditional Chinese zodiac, right? They mark the 12 divisions of what we call the 24-hour day. And like the signs of the Western zodiac, each of these signs is associated with certain characteristics. You know, so if you're born in the year of the horse or the year of the rabbit or the year of the snake, there are said to be fortunate pairings for your life partner and less fortunate pairings for your life partner, depending. But the point being here is this is another way of expressing Dogen saying, pay attention through every moment of your life. And the fact that these are characterized as different animals, to me, gives it a certain liveliness, you know, that each of these animals has a being time as well as is being time. Okay, one more. Pat.
At this moment, you enlighten the entire world with 3 heads and 8 arms. You enlighten the entire world with the 16-foot golden body. To fully actualize the entire world with the entire world is called thorough practice. To fully actualize the golden body with the golden body, to arouse the way-seeking mind, practice, attain enlightenment, and enter nirvana, is nothing but being, nothing but time.
So he's kind of describing a simultaneous world creation in each moment of our life as awakening, as fully actualizing the Buddha body, Buddha mind, through the medium of this particular human life and consciousness. And what we often think of as stages of practice, arousing aspiration, the way-seeking mind, practice, awakening, entering nirvana upon death, he's saying are all being time, not sequential, which is quite a radical view, I think, and hard for us to really grasp. But he says, just actualize all time as all being. There is nothing extra. An extra being is thoroughly an extra being. Thus, being time, half actualized, is half of being time. Of completely actualized. Being time, half actualized, is half of being time completely actualized. And a moment that seems to be missed is also completely being. In the same way, even the moment before or after the moment that appears to be missed is also being time, complete in itself. Vigorously abiding in each moment is being time. Do not mistakenly confuse it as not being. Do not forcefully assert it as being. What is he talking about? Being time half actualized? Well, he's talking about the way we try and quantify our experience. Oh, I'm not there yet, right? I'm only, you know, kind of half awakened, right? Or the way we compare with each other or somebody else. He's talking about that comparing mind, and he's saying, drop all that. Drop it and vigorously abide in each moment. Do not mistakenly confuse it as non-being. Do not forcefully assert it as being. So he's talking here about the middle way. If you're too attached to the absolute, you risk nihilism, right? Well, everything's empty, so what's the point? Or, if there's no you and no me, I can just take what's yours and disregard your integrity. This is how highly realized Zen masters get in trouble for sexual misconduct, right? Well, there's no you or me. And if you're attached to the relative, which we more often are, we're pushed and pulled all the time, blown about by the eight worldly winds. Pleasure and pain, loss and gain, praise and blame, fame and disrepute. Right? Whoops, don't want that, want that, don't want that, want that. Don't want blame, want praise. We're blown all the time. So that's if we're too much in the relative. So the middle path is what the Buddha teaches and what Dogen is saying here. So I think I've talked far too much. I was trying to get through all that section so we can have time tomorrow. But what I'd like, yeah, I think we have time. I'd like you to divide in groups of three again, but first just take some time to look back over what we've just read, or you can go back to the morning as well if you want. And just mark any phrases or passages that somehow really have resonance for you. Just see what, just look, just review, just look back over, you know, something that you might stick on your fridge or your bathroom mirror.
Instagram.
Oh, that. Yeah. take a few minutes and see what's there.